Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Marcy Cheek, and this is my show, Say What? When? Where? And most importantly, why? For the last several weeks, with the exception of last week, I've been talking about weddings. And tonight I'm going to be talking about the rehearsal and also telling some how they met stories. I'm always asked about how did they meet? How did they meet? So I'm going to save that juicy part till the end. But a wedding is really the celebration of being a woman. You know, the woman has the womb. Without the womb, there would be no continuation of the human race. And as we have discussed in the past, it was all about the woman having a child. And the woman has been just a womb only in the more immediate past. But in the more distant past, the feminine energies were celebrated in a more holy and sacred way. In the earliest religions, there is a full manifestation of male and female in the hierarchies of the deities. And don't forget, even in the patriarchal systems of religion today, the scriptures still say, let us make man in our image. So this is saying that the creation of man and all of the other kingdoms of the earth, actually, mineral, plant, and the animal kingdoms, was done by a plurality of deities who agreed to create everything together. And as humans, we are made in the image of that plurality of deities, which to me is the male and the female. And just as an aside here, since our Supreme Court is now beginning its deliberations into the issue of gay marriage, I just wanted to say that I also believe that marriage should be between a man and a woman. However, we cannot have the only way to tell if a man is a man or a woman is a woman to be their outward genitalia. I have married 8 couples that in outward genitalia would be considered same sex, but in the inward essence of their very being, in every single case, one was a man and one was a woman. And in one case, I married a couple where the man with the penis in his inward essence really was the woman, and the woman with the vagina in her inner essence was the man. And in another bizarre case, the man with the penis in his inward essence was a woman, but he was a lesbian, and he married another woman. So I just don't believe this issue can be resolved until we have some other technological way to determine if a person is male or female. We've certainly had enough on television lately showing that the transgender person and people who are changing their outward genitalia to match that part of themselves inwardly that they feel that they are. So let's just say all of created life is based on male and female, and so should marriage be between male and female. But in some instances, the male and the female might have the same outward genitalia. So actually being gay is really just being true to oneself, being true to the inward, total inward essence of the person's whole being. So there's a beautiful meditation that I have practiced that has come down through the ages. The male and the female gods are making love, and the bliss of their being together generates a sacred nectar that spills out from the union. And in the meditation, we begin to have that sacred nectar enter into our being. It comes in with the crown chakra, and it goes all the way down throughout all the cells of our body, uniting with the unconditional love at the core of every cell, and then radiating out into the entire cell, filling it with love and healing and health, and bringing it into resonance with the original divine blueprint for our being. And then the nectar is released out of our body through the normal portals of secretion, and it goes into the realms of the hungry ghosts and the evil ones and devils who are desperate to get some of the nectar, even if it's in a secondhand form. I love this picture because, first of all, it defines the constitution of God as male and female, and it truly represents the pure and unconditional love of God, who reigns on the just and the unjust. God just lets the rain come down. He doesn't separate out the good ones from the bad ones and say, oh, only the good ones get rain today and the bad ones can't have any. God, the Bible says God reigns on the just and the unjust. So a wedding is an entering into this eternal union, since we are made in the image of the plurality of God, male and female, and the sacred nectar of the union will radiate out into the home, into the neighborhood, into the city, the state, and the nation, and eventually out onto the whole earth, bringing love and enlightenment to all. And that is the real celebration of a marriage. That's what we're really celebrating when you go to a wedding. Okay, now the rehearsal. If you have more than a best man and a maid or a matron of honor standing up with you at a wedding, it's probably best to have a rehearsal. This is especially true if you have children in the wedding. And if you've asked your best friends and members of your family to stand up with you during the ceremony, they're nervous about doing this. They don't want to do anything that would cause a problem or take the attention off of you and your special day. If something's messed up, they don't want to be the one who did it. So doing a rehearsal of everything lets everyone know what their job is, when they are to do it, and how they are to do it. And at rehearsals, members of the bridal party do all sorts of things. They act out their own personal pure comedy routines. They dance down the aisle. They put rabbit ears on each other. When you ask for the rings, best man look and look and look and look for the rings. I tell them to get all that stuff out of their system tonight, because tomorrow, when we're going to be doing the real thing, everything is going to be dignified, and actually I like to think of it as sacred. Everything that is done at a wedding should be dignified and sacred, in honor and respect for the bride and the groom. They have made this decision to be married. It's their decision. We don't have to agree with it, but we can be happy for them. And our presence at the wedding is to celebrate and to validate their love. You know, I believe that a couple is never more in love than they are on their wedding day. And after doing thousands of weddings, I'm convinced that every bride and every groom believe at that moment that they have found the one. And they believe they're going to be together forever, forever and ever. Now, this is the moment I enter into as the officiant. And by the power I have from the state of California, I declare that they are husband and wife. So at the rehearsals, I tell the bridal party, we are here to celebrate the woman. Everything we're going to be doing tomorrow is about the woman. Without women, we would have no future life. So we will begin by seating the mothers in honor of having the womb, and dads, you will walk behind the mother, two steps behind now, just like Prince Philip of England, you notice how he walks just a little behind the queen. And if the father and the mother are divorced, then there is a wedding protocol today for these situations. And certainly rehearsals are places where family dynamics do show up. At one rehearsal I had, the bride's father and mother had been divorced when she was young. And the father was remarried. And the mother had been with her partner in life for 17 years. So we began by practicing the seating of the mothers. I had the groom's mother walk down the aisle and seated by the best man, with his father walking two steps behind. And then I had the bride's mother seated by the bride's brother, with her partner in life walking two steps behind. The groom's mother was sitting on the first seat on the front row on the right side going down the aisle, and the bride's mother was seated on the first seat on the front row on the left side going down the aisle. Then we started to seat the wife of the father of the bride. I had the best man take her down the aisle and be seated on the second seat of the second row on the right, on the left side going down the aisle. Well, when she got to the seat, she just stopped dead in her tracks and announced to everyone, "I can't sit here. I am the wife of the captain. I sit on the front row in the first seat." Oh, boy. And it was then that I learned that the bride's father was a full captain in the U.S. Navy, having served for 25 years. And this woman had been his wife for 18 of those years. And she was accustomed to being in the best and most honored seat at everything as the wife of the captain. Everyone was aghast, and I went to the bride and asked her what she wanted me to do. Well, she just shrugged her shoulders. So I looked at the father of the bride, and he said, "I'll go talk to her." And so I went with him. And he said, "Honey, just today we're going to sit on the second row." Well, she fought like a tiger. She said, "Well, just look at the bride's mother's friend. They aren't even married, and he gets to sit on the first row. I am the wife of the captain, and I should be on the front row." So I pointed to the seat at the end of the front row on the left-hand side, farthest away from the aisle, and I said to her, "You can sit there." And she just looked horrified. So seeing the bride hiding over in the corner and the frustration all over the face of the father of the bride, I finally said, "Today you are the wife of the father of the bride, not the wife of the captain. And today is the bride's day. We are not following military protocol today. We are following a traditional wedding protocol the best way that we can when there are divorced and separated parents." So she looked at me and just plopped herself down with a great display of exaggerated disgust. Everyone was so uncomfortable. And so I prayed that by the next day when we had the real thing, that she would be gracious and accepting of her demoted position at the wedding. And apparently after the rehearsal, the captain had some more discussions with his wife about how they were going to be doing things the next day, and fortunately, she acted like a lady. I always ask my bride if she wants the bridesmaids and groomsmen to come in as couples, or if they want the men to already be at the altar and have the girls walk in one at a time. And one wedding that stands out to me was at one of our local country clubs. The ceremony was held outdoor on the golf course around the pool that had cascading fountains in the center. And there were seven men and seven women in this bridal party, not including the bride and groom. The bride wanted all of the men to already be standing at the altar. So the groom and I and the seven gentlemen all walked in from the side and took our place. And then the processional of the women began. One gorgeous breast-enhanced woman after another, in red strapless mini-dresses and high, high heels, walking down the aisle. The bride herself had an ample bosom that was natural, but all these other girls had all had breast implants. What a display of womanhood. I wondered if they were all Hooter girls. But I thought to myself, this bride certainly was self-confident to be able to share her day with seven other women who were just as dynamic and dramatic and just as beautiful as she was. Another big wedding was for a couple who had been living together in their home in a local neighborhood for 10 years. They had four children together, and they had decided to get married, and they had asked each of their neighbors to be in the wedding. So there were 10 other couples who participated. They divided the seating of the guests up into four sections in their backyard. So each couple walked in from the back, down the side, to the break in the middle. They crossed in the middle, did a little dance together, and then walked down the aisle to the front. The girls were all in long, flowing pink dresses with big pink flower bouquets, and the men were all in tuxedos. And apparently this neighborhood had been looking forward to this wonderful day for a long time. They had rehearsed this waltz in the front the night before, and everything went perfectly. If you have been asked to be in a friend's wedding, your job is to do what the bride asks you to do. If there is something she wants you to do that is outside your own personal boundary for some reason, you can just decline to be in the wedding. We never, ever overstep our own personal integrity. But if you're going to accept and be in the wedding, then you just go along with the program and you do what you are told. It's the bride's day, her way. Today, most bridal attendants pay for their own dresses and suits. Men can just rent a tuxedo for a formal wedding. But the girls go through a much more elaborate process of getting a dress and the shoes and all of the accessories. Now, most of my weddings are at the beach, and the men wear white gauzy shirts and tan dockers. Very comfortable. But I also have those brides who want it all, to be married on the sand and have a full Princess Diana wedding dress and the men all in tuxedos. And two of my beach brides have been married in Vera Wang dresses. And I have a picture of one of those dresses on my website at www.marcianne.com. One of my most favorite weddings was a full military wedding, and the way those Marines escorted their ladies has set the tone for all rehearsals that I have done ever since. We did this wedding at the beach, but the men were all in their dress blues, and there was an honor guard of Marines who all had their swords, and they created the arch of swords that the bride walked under to come to the altar. The groom also had a best man and five groomsmen who stood with him, all in their dress blues. The bride wanted the bridesmaids and the groomsmen to come in as couples. So each groomsman walked his lady down the aisle, and I was so impressed with the dignity and with the honor that each Marine showed to his lady. He so elegantly accompanied her down the aisle, giving her his full attention, walking her all the way to her position at the altar, then releasing her, and then walking across in front of me to the groom, standing in front of the groom and saluting, and then taking his place. Since this wedding, at all rehearsals, I have had the men accompany the women in this way, walking them all the way to their place, releasing them, and then walking over to the groom, doing a high five or shaking hands or giving a hug. And also, I've had the groomsmen walk the bridesmaid down the aisle and have the bridesmaid kiss the groom on the cheek, and then the groomsman escorts the lady to her position. And then he walks back across to the groom and greets him in some way and then takes his position. This gives such an elegance to the processional, because I've seen a lot of bridesmaids and groomsmen just sort of lope down the aisle, part at the front, and each one walked to one side each side so uninspired and not very classy. So let's prolong this celebration as much as we can. This is what is called pomp and circumstance, and I just love it. If there's been a big rehearsal dinner and party the night before, then there's more of a chance that bridal attendants are going to be sort of washed down on the wedding day. And it's more common than you think to have someone at the wedding either pass out or get sick. This past summer, we had unusually hot weather during July and August here in California. I have weddings every weekend, and we, of course, had weddings scheduled every weekend, and I was so alarmed to see temperatures in the 90s at the beach. That's just unheard of here. So I called all my brides that were having their ceremonies down on the sand, and I told them it would be better if they didn't take their older people down there. There are 26 steps to get down to the beach in Laguna Beach. And it's not so bad going down, but it's a real test of health and strength to get back up. And I recommended that the older folks stay up on top and watch from the cliff. They couldn't hear anything, but they would be able to see everything. But at two of my weddings, however, everybody wanted to go down to the sand, and both times we had to call 911 and get the paramedics there to take older guests to the hospital. In both cases, it was the bride's grandmother who needed assistance. They were both women in their 80s. Several times I've had guests pass out or get sick and have to call 911, and I've had best man, maid of honors, bridesmaids, groomsmen, and even the broom pass out. The wedding where the groom passed out was in a small chapel. The church was a replica of many, many elaborate and adorned churches that are all over Europe. Beautiful big stained glass windows, a big pipe organ, carpet down the aisle, wood pews, big candelabra on each side of the altar where we stood to do the ceremony. But it was a really hot day that day, and the church was not air-conditioned, since we rarely need air-conditioning in California. And the men had gotten together to get dressed earlier that day, so they had been in their tuxedos for quite a while. And the bride was late getting to the church, so we waited and waited. Well, apparently the groom was sweating up a storm under the jacket of his tuxedo, both from nervousness and also because it was such a hot day. And he was getting dehydrated without us or himself even knowing it. So just as the bride appeared at the doorway to walk down the aisle, down he went. The guest gasped, and instinctively I stepped over to him and laid hands on him and began speaking in tongues. Early in my experience as a human here on earth, as a family, we went to a Pentecostal church that taught the story of the disciples going to the upper room after Jesus ascended. Jesus said, "I'm going to go away, but I'll send the Holy Spirit to lead and guide you from now on, so just go to the upper room and wait for my second coming." So the disciples went to the upper room and waited, and suddenly the room was filled with the power of God's Spirit, and everyone began to speak in tongues. Well, some denominations today now teach that the speaking in tongues was only for that moment, but our church taught that we could always know that we had the power of God in us by always being able to speak in tongues. And my whole life, I have lived in that knowledge that God was in me, and indeed that I gave God form. So spontaneously I just laid hands on him. I began speaking in tongues to raise him from the dead if I had to. Jesus raised the dead. He said I could do everything that he did, and I could do even more miraculous things than he did, and I totally believed I could raise him from the dead if it was needed. Well, his mother and father were sitting on the front pew, so they also spontaneously sprang into action from their seats. And the father said to the best man and the groomsmen, "Get him outside. Does anyone have any water?" And so I announced to the guests that there would be a short delay and we would begin the ceremony again in about an hour. The bride and her father went back to sit into the limo, and the best man and the groomsmen picked up the groom and took him outside. The coordinator for the chapel immediately brought water, and the men stripped the groom of his tuxedo jacket and his shirt and began rubbing water all over him. The hydration and the stimulation of the massaging began to bring him back to consciousness. Sorry, I've had a cold this week. And the best man kept saying, "I just can't believe this. This man is an ox. He's the fullback of our football team. I have never seen him in any kind of weakness the entire time I've known him. I just can't believe this." But gradually, after eating some food and drinking a lot of water, he felt like he could go on with the ceremony. "I have always told my brides, now that you have hired me to take care of all the details for you, all you have to do now is to get gorgeous. And when you walk down that aisle, take his breath away." And I told his bride afterwards, I said, "This wedding is the epitome of taking his breath away." So even with the most perfect rehearsal, sometimes things happen that cannot be anticipated. And this is where you need to have hired total professionals. We've seen it all. And we can respond in an immediate and professional way. You're not always going to have a minister who believes she can raise the dead, but most of us can handle most any situation that comes up. And at the rehearsal, after we've gone through the processional and the recessional three times, I tell the entire bridal party, "Now tomorrow, you are prepared. You will be able to do your best. But just remember, the guests have no idea what we have planned. They don't know what's supposed to happen. They'll have no idea if things are going the way they are supposed to or not. So tomorrow, come looking your best, and we will do what we did today. But no matter what happens, the bride and the groom are going to end up being married. So don't stress. Everything will be perfect, no matter what happens." I remember one wedding I did that was in a small chapel. We did the rehearsal the day before. There was a ring boy. He was probably about 6 years old. And we practiced the processional, and he bravely walked down the aisle alone, and then the two little flower girls behind him right before the bride, and he proudly took his place in between the groom and the best man. Well, at the rehearsal, you really don't go through the ceremony. You practice the giving away of the bride, and you practice the giving of the rings. But when we practiced the rings, we just went through the actions, and we didn't use the real rings. Well, on the day of the wedding, the processional went perfectly, the little ring boy taking his position in between the groom and the best man holding his little pillow. But the little pillow only had fake rings on it, and the best man had the real rings in his pocket. So I asked for the rings, and the little boy held up the pillow for me. And then he noticed that the best man took the rings out of his pocket and gave them to me. And he burst into tears, sobbing and sobbing. Oh, I knelt down and put my arm around him. I tried to console him, but he just would not be consoled. So I alarmingly looked out to the congregation, pleading for the mother of this boy to come and get him. But the bride whispered his mother was a bridesmaid. So I looked down to the bridesmaid and nodded for her to come and get him, which she did. But he continued crying during the rest of the ceremony. Well, from that day on, I have discussed this with every bride who is having a ring boy. Tell them if they have the real rings or not. I never let ring boys have the real rings at the beach. It's just too dangerous, because I've seen those ring boys take that pillow and shoo away bumblebees off the flowers and toss it back and forth between other children at the wedding. But even in more controlled places like a hotel or a country club, the ring boy needs to know if he has the real rings or not. And if he has real rings, he should be with an adult who is responsible for him. I always suggest that he be given the pillow with the real rings right before he walks down the aisle. And usually I like to have him be escorted by an adult. And sometimes brides who want to have the ring boy have the real rings will tie those rings onto the pillow so tightly we can't get them off. I've had to ask for a pocket knife. So rehearsals get most of the bugs out. Rehearsals let everybody in the wedding know what they're supposed to do and when and how they're supposed to do it. And ceremonies that have rehearsals usually go very smoothly. Now, I never have rehearsals at the beach. My staff and I coordinate the bridal party the day of the wedding. It's hard enough to get everybody parked and available for the ceremony on the wedding day without having to go through everything the day before at the beach. So many times people who are in the wedding are coming from somewhere else, and many times they aren't even there for the rehearsal anyway. So I just get everybody lined up, and I instruct them the day of the wedding, and it always works out. And again, as I tell my brides, no matter what happens, you are going to end up being married today. I think the funniest wedding story I have is the couple I married at the courthouse in Santa Ana, California. Now, a couple can go to the courthouse and get married by the clerk of the court for $35. You go into a small little room, and the clerk says, "Do you take this woman to be your wife? Do you take this man to be your husband?" "Yes, yes, I pronounce you husband and wife." It takes under 5 minutes. But this couple wanted to be married out on the grass outside of the courthouse, and they were willing to pay me $250 to come and do it. The groom was in a tuxedo, and the bride was in a gorgeous wedding dress, and about 50 people came to the ceremony. I asked them, why in the world did they want to do it on the grass at the courthouse? And the groom said, "All my family knows how to get to the courthouse." That's a true story. I couldn't make that up. But you know what? Their pictures just came out gorgeous. As the old Orange County Courthouse is a very European-looking, stately building that looks like someplace in Rome, with arches and balustrades and balconies and staircases. And symbolically, it's kind of a mystical place for a wedding ceremony, because it was built before the 1906 earthquake in San Francisco, and it survived that earthquake, which was felt pretty good down here in Orange County. So a marriage at that courthouse can survive the earthquakes of a relationship. So I told you I was going to save the juicy part for last. So where do most of my couples find each other? Now, I have every bride and groom fill out a questionnaire for me. The questionnaire gives me the information I need to coordinate the wedding and write the personalized romantic wedding ceremony for them. I find out all the family dynamics, if the couple has any religious preferences, and if they want traditional or non-traditional vows, who is going to be in the wedding, who will be walking the bride down the aisle, and also I ask how they met and what are the three things they love about one another. Now, remember, I've done thousands of weddings, so let me give you my statistics. Over 50%, the number one place couples meet each other is at work. So if you aren't working, you just lost a 50% chance of meeting your true love. And the number two place couples meet, this is another 35%, is at school. High school and college, some even start out knowing each other from grade school. So getting an education is the second most important thing you can do if you want to meet your true love. And the number three place where couples meet, and this is another 10%, is being introduced to one another by a friend. So this accounts for 90% of all the marriages. Number one at work, number two at school, number three introduced by a friend. So in only 10% of my weddings is there any other kind of a story. And those stories range from my groom from New Jersey going to work on a Solomon fishing boat in Alaska, and the bride from the Solomon Islands who was the cook housekeeper on the boat, to a man whose hobby was antique cars, and he owned a 1921 Ford coupe, and the woman went to an antique auto car show and saw his car on display, and they struck up a conversation and found out they both had a love of old cars. So I married them in their backyard, And when I drove up to their home, there were 10 antique cars parked out in front, belonging to all the guests who came to the wedding. And then less than 1% meet on a dating site. So did you notice that none of these couples found one another at a bar? Now, one of my brides told me this story. As a married woman, she wanted to do a project for herself, and she decided to create her perfect partner on paper. During the 30 years of her marriage, she had continued to advance in her own personal self-improvement. While she was going to raising her children, she went to college and got a degree in arts and design, and she started her career at a local home improvement store, helping people redo their kitchens and baths and redecorate their homes. Well, the husband was pretty much the same as the day they were married. He was a construction worker, couch potato, happy watching football, and drinking his beer with his buddies. For 2 years, this woman carried a piece of paper in her purse, and she daily was listing and unlisting her concepts of what she thought she would truly desire in a perfect mate. Finally, she decided she had created the perfect person on the paper. So she took the list to a calligrapher, and she had it written fancily on parchment paper, and she put it in her safety deposit box at the bank. Well, 2 years later, she and her husband were at a New Year's Eve party, and at the stroke of midnight, as the chimes of the grandmother clock in the corner rang in the new year, a man came over and took her into his arms and kissed her. And she knew that he was the man on her piece of paper. And long story short, he was, and he had every single thing she had listed on her list that she wanted, even to a small patch of hair right above his buttocks. He was already divorced, so she got her divorce, and I married them out on the porch of the home where they had met at that New Year's Eve party. They both were now over 50 years old, and they told me that they believed that they had been together before, but both of them had died before they were 50. So now they were going to be able to grow old together. So if you haven't met your twin flame yet, get a job or go to school, or make your list, and then you can call me, and I'll marry you at the beach. Well, this is the last in my series of about weddings. Of course, since I do weddings all the time, I'm going to be talking about them, of course, from time to time. But starting next week, I'm going to invite you to join me on a personal journey that I have begun. Can't get my music to play here. There we go. It involves some very interesting classes I've been taking and some personal life coaching that I've been doing with a life coach. And I'm going to do a series on that experience. And so before I say goodbye today, I wanted to read you a poem that one of my brides had read at her wedding. It's called My Forever Soulmate. Your smile brings light to my darkness. Your touch takes away my pain. Your eyes dance with love for me, and your lips speak only my name. We were meant to be together. There's no other way it could be. Because without you by my side, I no longer could be me. You've changed my life forever, You've shown me the meaning of true love. You've opened my eyes to new things, and you've brought me closer to my God above. You are the love of my life. Not even death could do us apart, for you are my forever soulmate, and I love you with all of my heart. My music is by visionarymusic.com, music designed to support us in all transitions of our life and to support health and wellness. And this is Marcianne now saying aloha. Aloha is hello, goodbye, and I love you.